talking about chicken a la king,
mango and garbanzo tabbouleh,
grilled potatoes and vegetables with roasted garlic and basil,
zucchini ziti,
granola fruit bar. Yeah,
look at all this beautiful food.
Welcome to Green Eggs and Dan, the podcast where I interview amazing humans with amazing minds, but all we care about is what is in their bellies.
My guest today, I'm so excited. I couldn't be more excited about my guest today. He is a Peabody Award-winning reporter at NPR's WNYC. He's written for Political, The New York Times, The Washington Post, and The New Republic. He was previously a reporter at the Philadelphia Inquirer, The Courier Post, and The Daily Record. He's known for his coverage of New Jersey Governor Chris Christie and is the author of American Governor, Chris Christie's Bridge to Redemption. And now he covers immigration, refugees, and hate.
Yes.
All the haters. But more importantly than all those credits, he gave us the title for this podcast, Green Eggs and Dan. Please give it up. I'm hosting a comedy show.
This is the best.
Give it up for Matt Katz, everyone. Yes. Matt Katz.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks for being here.
That was the most enthusiastic welcome I've ever had.
For real?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, normally, public radio, it's like, and now our guest is Matt
Katz. Michelle Norris. Today we have Matthew Katz.
Do they give you guys, oxy before you go on the air? Matt is not only an extremely well-respected and revered journalist, he's also, I was going to say one of my best friends in the world, but probably
top 10.
Probably top three, I'd say.
Wow, nice.
Yeah, top three BFFs. And because of that, we've enjoyed a lot of meals together, and we can talk extensively about that. Matt is glutarded, dairy-tarded.
Oh, Dan, you don't even know. It's gotten so much worse than that.
Really?
Of late, yeah.
Are you going to get a lot of shit from the NPR listeners when they're like, Matt, heard someone say glutarded and didn't stop and walk off?
That is not an appropriate word.
You're right. Yeah. You're right. So then why are you winking at me right
gluten
now?
Gluten resistant.
Gluten resistant. Okay. You give me all the appropriate words when I like Latinx.
Yeah, I say you
told me about Latinx.
Yep.
We couldn't call them, what was I calling them?
I'm not going to repeat it, but I tell you what you can't say anymore.
Yeah, you tell me what I can't say anymore.
Yeah.
So basically our conversations have just become me staring at Matt and him staring back at me. One of my favorite times of the year is I do a show at UPenn every year, and Matt lives in Philly with his wife, Deb, and I love Deb. She is always a wonderful host, and we always end up going out to a wonderful dinner,
right?
Which you usually curate. You get it ready. You know how important this stuff is for me.
Sure.
The last time we went to a vegan restaurant, what was it called?
Veg. Considered one of the best vegan restaurants in the country.
I didn't love it.
You were hungry afterwards.
I was hungry afterwards. We did go to an izakaya place
after.
Yes,
Double Knot. Which you also enjoy.
I love
Double Knot.
Double Knot, great place in Philly. You go downstairs, it's hidden. You know, it's one of those like, am I at a speakeasy?
Right.
Like, it's fantastic. And then we usually come home and drunkenly Postmates Philly cheesesteaks.
Yes.
Which this year we got them from where? Pat's?
We got Pat's this year because they have, it comes so quick. It's like 12 minutes.
Yes.
I think 12 minutes this year.
Unbelievable.
We like ordered it and then we went out to the stoop and then the guy rolled up.
Yeah. Was this the year that rolled up on the bike?
That was 2 years
two
ago.
2 years ago, someone came up on a bike and we were all fucking stoned and... No, we weren't stoned.
I don't know what you were doing.
I was stoned. you introduced me to Philly cheesesteaks as well. I knew nothing about them. There was when I came to Philly for the first time, you gave me the whole tutorial.
Yeah.
It's very like race based.
Yeah.
There's like the black Philly cheesesteak guys. That one?
That's Jim's on South Street.
Jim's on South Street, which I think is probably my favorite.
Yeah, I agree.
And then there was the Pat's, which is like racist Italian.
No, the Gino's is the one that had the you must speak English when ordering sign.
Right.
Because
they
are open almost 24 hours a day, and they didn't like that there were day laborers, like Mexican and Central American day laborers, who were coming there for breakfast and ordering cheesesteaks in heavy accents.
Yes.
So Gino put a sign up.
Yeah. By the
Which
way, Gino,
a bit of a
Gino, sponsor of the podcast. So you have to be able to speak English to listen to this podcast.
Yes.
That's what Gino tells us. Well, before we go into more about Philly food, which I love Philly food, let's go into your fridge.
Okay.
We have a great picture of your fridge here. You can check it out at Stand Up Dan, the Instagram. It's up there. I'll be explaining what we have in general here. In general, I'm seeing a theme, by the way, of like you can tell who's married and you can tell who's single by their fridge.
Jammed.
This is jam-packed, organized. Well, was this staged for the picture?
Don't lie to me. On Sundays, often we'll do some food shopping, and then there's some reorganization that goes on.
Yeah.
Deb will reorganize the fridge. So you happen to catch me right after a reorganization.
I mean,
I can walk you through it.
It's really beautiful. Well, there's a couple things I want to I'd like to start with
that come
at me right away. First of all, a lot of wonderful artisanal beers.
Yeah, I can explain that.
Okay, go.
I had a fantasy baseball draft of neighborhood dads on Friday night.
Yeah.
And they all bring their fancy beers and loaded them up in my fridge.
Yes.
The reason I have the draft is to get the fancy beers. But the reason why there's still so many left, also there's Miller Lite.
Yes.
Which is the
people's beer.
Yeah, it's the Miller dads. That's the that's the main cheap dad beer for my neighborhood.
Oh, right.
So there's always a couple of those tall boys.
What's your favorite cheap beer?
No, I used to be Coors Light guy, but I've moved to Miller Lite.
Really?
What about you?
You're living the high life?
And the high life is a different beer.
Isn't Miller High Life? This is Miller Lite. Miller High Life is different. I misspoke. I apologize.
What's your favorite cheap beer?
I like the Japanese beers, like Sapporo.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I think they're crisp and nice.
Yeah.
I think actually. What?
That's not your cheap, like, you know, drinking, have 20 in a hot afternoon beer. Is it? That would be like a Coors Light or a Miller Light or a Bud Light.
I see what you're doing.
Yeah.
I'm just asking. You're painting me as a pretentious person.
I mean, you said Sapporo when I asked what your favorite cheap beer is.
We're going to edit that out. Let's start it over.
Yeah.
Ask me again.
What's your favorite
PBR?
Cheap beer?
PBR, bro. Love me some PBR. Although PBR actually has corn syrup in it. Huge debate in the beer community now about this corn syrup in your beer or not, which started with the Super Bowl ads. Remember there was Super Bowl ads about the Bud Light Gilly Gilly guys?
Uh-huh.
And they're like, we got delivered a bunch of corn syrup. And they're like, let's go give it to, was it the Coors people that they go to? Guys? Anyone? You remember this? Anyway, whatever the competing, I think it was Coors. They're like, we've come to deliver this corn syrup for you because we don't use it. And then there was this huge court case. There's a lawsuit where Coors is saying, if it's Coors, we'll find out in a second, is saying we don't actually have corn syrup in the beer. It's used during the fermentation process. And then they're like, yeah, well, of course, no one has sugar in their beer. It's all fermented into alcohol. That's how beer is made.
Right.
So there's a whole thing. But PBR also has corn syrup in there. And that's... I think it's so incredible, by the way, that that's even on people's minds now.
Yeah.
There was a Super Bowl ad about they use corn syrup in blue-collar beer, and it's lowering the sales
that's amazing.
Of the beer. I mean, I remember when I got onto the corn syrup, got hip to corn syrup after reading, Omnivore's Dilemma.
Okay.
And no one was talking, and I would be like, "Is this corn syrup?" Like, "Shut up, loser!"
it's in the
zeitgeist.
Zeitgeist now, exactly right.
It's a Super Bowl ad.
PBR is kind of famous in Philly because the Philly, the citywide Philly special for a long time was the can of PBR and a shot of Jim Beam. So you go to a bar and you get the PBR. And a shot, you just say it kind of the special.
Yeah.
And it's PBR, a shot of Jim Beam, which was how much money do you think that cost?
$5?
$3.
Get out of here.
Just went up to $4.
$5
in some places, right? I mean, you can get hammered if you don't tip for less than $10. That's what that meant.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I don't love PBR though. I mean, I said it to be to sound like one of the people.
Yeah.
But
you don't like it.
I don't love
it. It's not that good.
I don't know, man. I don't like the cheap beers. Tecate, can we consider that?
Yeah, sure.
I like the Mexican cheap beers.
That's good.
I like the international cheap beers.
So I haven't had beer in 7 weeks.
For real?
Which is why there's still so many beers in my fridge. And my wife is freaking out because the Seder is coming, Passover.
Yes.
And she doesn't give a shit that it's like not, you know, kosher for Passover. It's more like there's not room in the fridge.
Oh, okay.
But I'm off beer right now.
Because of gluten?
Dan, we could spend this entire time talking about my medical issues. I'm now, as of yesterday, I'm off lettuce, strawberries, peaches, my favorite fucking fruit, by the way. What's your favorite fruit?
First of all, what part of evolution is trying to get rid of you? Do you not understand? You should not be alive, Mad Cats.
I know.
Peaches?
This is all temporary.
Peaches are taking you out?
I'm hoping this is temporary. Yeah.
Why?
I decided to see a special doctor beginning in January.
Is it like a hippie doctor or like a real doctor?
MD.
Okay.
But yes. So the doctor is a it's
med school, functional, med school in the Caribbean.
It's called functional
med school in the Caribbean.
I haven't looked up the records. Functional medicine.
Okay.
So this is a way of, you know, preventative and dealing with gut health and all sorts of things.
What's wrong with you
now?
Well,
I just
seriously,
somebody told me that
we'll go out and Matt we'll just like be eating a meal and Matt'll get up and go vomit and come back and keep eating like a like an insecure 16-year-old girl.
Well, I'm very secure in this.
I know.
It's
no,
not
I,
just that way. It's also the other way. Somebody told me some months ago that it's not supposed to hurt when you poop. Did you know that?
What are you talking
about? No, because it was hurting regularly.
What are you talking about, Peabody Award winning Mac?
I'm just saying, I was having gastro. I wanted to get on top of this. So
it was
it's costing
you
a lot of money
to poop? Like hemorrhoidy stuff?
I mean, you know, I mean, we can. We don't need to. I'm just telling you, I was having some issues. So I went to this doctor.
Okay.
And they put me on this diet to stabilize my system.
Okay.
Because there was concern about inflammation. I also had picked up a couple of bacterial diseases back in 2018. So I'm dealing with those as well.
Oh, my God.
So.
Dude, your body is not meant to be alive.
So
if
they
if you were born a century
time,
ago,
any other time,
yeah,
in
you'd
history.
Be. Here lies 7-year-old Matt Katz.
That's when my that is when my stomach
started hurting.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah.
Oh man, what
there was
bummer.
A block party on my block when I was 7, and somebody made pigs in the blanket down the block, and then I ate. So I ate like 8 of them because pigs in the blanket are amazing, and then I spent the entire block party in the back of my mom's Maxima. Trying to not throw up, but also throw up. And that's that's sort of when it began.
That's when it began.
Actually, that's not true. It began earlier when I started having ear infections due to dairy. In any case, so I'm off at the
you
moment.
Fucking loser. I had ear infections because of the milk.
I'm trying to get on top. I'm trying to stabilize the gut so then I can eat freely.
Matt also
for the rest
sort
of
looks like Jimmy from South Park. So imagine just like, no? No,
do
Timmy.
I? Timmy?
You look a little Timmy-ish. Jimmy? You look like Timmy. Your insides don't work.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And you have a beautiful wife.
Thank you.
It's unbelievable.
And children?
And, two of my favorite kids.
Yeah.
I love your kids.
Thanks.
Like the way that I interact with your daughter.
Oh, you talk shit to her as if it was you and I.
Treat her like an adult.
In your sob when we were like 16.
Treat her like an adult.
Yes, you certainly do.
And I think I'm one of her favorite.
You are.
I'm
you
one
are.
Of her favorites.
You are.
Because I do that.
And you're in the Hollywood.
You do have 2 kids, but I don't see like so many kids.
Well, you know, my 4-year-old still likes his sippy cup. He loves his milk. He's also, I'll give you a little tour. So he's smallish, like, you know me. So I asked the doctor, and the doctor last week told me to go to whole milk instead of the 2% milk.
Okay.
So we got a couple, and he loves milk. So he's got 2%, we got the milks.
Yeah.
And then we got the beers. I was hoping you would notice something in the top center, because it's unusual.
Bone broth?
Yeah.
Really?
Do you know what bone broth is?
I know. You're into all the hip.
So my doctor.
Let me guess. You put turmeric and everything now too?
Well,
because it's against inflammation?
Yeah. The inflammation is the root of all the problems, Dan.
Literally?
I'm telling you.
Oh, God.
That's what my doctor says.
You're like
so my
selling
doctor,
me Herbalife. You're going to start selling me Herbalife soon.
I spent $175 on supplements yesterday.
Oh, my God.
So anyway. So the bone broth, which is it's skin of the bovine. That's where it's come from. No, that's not true. That's the Celgene peptides.
Oh my God!
I'm on those
listen
as well.
To you, dude.
So the bone broth is the bone.
Just stop.
So the so I make this
eat whatever you want to eat.
You can't say that anymore. Oh. So I make egg drop soup now for breakfast.
Okay.
With bone broth, ginger, like a shit ton of ginger, okay, chopped up. And I use, what's the salt, you know, you people use all the time?
You people.
You know, you foodie types.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought it was an Iranian thing, which it usually is.
Usually is.
I was thinking sumac? Is that what you're
like
talking
pink,
about?
It's like pink Himalayan salt.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Do a little of that.
Yeah.
And the ginger and the bone broth and bok choy.
And does it help with it? It's supposed to help with something?
It's supposed to be all like gut healthy food. And I just feel it sets my system on a nice path in the morning. I love soup in the morning. When I was in Vietnam, you have pho and French pressed coffee in the morning.
Yeah.
It's like a great way to start your day.
Which, you didn't go to Vietnam for work. That was an in-between thing. But one of the cool things about your job is you get to travel to very interesting places for your work.
Yeah.
Which in July...
Yes.
I'm joining you.
Is that happening?
I'm at 92%.
Yes.
Matt is, tell him what you're getting.
Going to Japan. I got a journalism fellowship to study and report on the refugee policies of Japan, which are quite unique in that they don't take, they basically just don't take any
don't
refugees.
Take anyone. Yeah.
Yeah. And that they need immigrants desperately because they have the they live forever and they have hardly any kids, so they need refugees to take care of their old people and they don't have enough of a labor force,
right?
They need people to build stuff for the Olympics next year, so there's this movement to loosen refugee
laws.
They're
into tentacle porn. And they're
into
tentacle porn. They like tentacle porn.
I can report back on that.
You can use that in your NPR story when you're listing all the things about it. Also, they like tentacle porn. You're going to be covering Kurds, you said?
Yeah, there's Kurds, there's Congolese. They're living under, you know, some of them are like living in the shadows working. Some of them are actually like getting... there's a handful of Syrians that have won asylum there and are allowed to stay for a little while. So I'll be talking to those people. And then I'm going to do an episode for a new podcast we have coming out at WNYC called The Stakes.
Right.
And then a magazine story as well.
Very cool.
And they're like kind of overtly racist about why they don't want refugees.
Right.
But they give more money to the UN Refugee Agency than almost any other country. So they like kind of buy their way out of the obligation.
Hmm. Yeah, apparently white supremacists cite Japan a lot when they're like, this is why we need a white country.
Because
Japan, they're cool with it. Why can't we just do like the Japanese?
Yeah.
Very excited though. You're going for how long?
6 weeks.
And I'm coming for the last week.
For my birthday.
For your birthday week.
Yeah.
Matt is putting me up. He's got a place to stay.
Yeah.
And he's got fixers in Japan, which I've been to Tokyo, and it is one of the most magical places on earth. And I cannot wait to eat my face off with you in
Tokyo.
Should
we just eat? All day.
Just you take whatever you buy, all your little supplements you need, bro.
Yeah,
because we are not holding off. We're gonna have all the dairy.
Am I gonna be
your
able?
Ears
I was
are
gonna
be fucked from all the dairy.
I'm gonna put my supplement powders in like little Ziplocs, and I'm wondering about how that's gonna go over with customs.
Oh my God, you know what? I'm actually might be canceling this trip. We're gonna go to like a cool little ramen joint, and you're gonna be like, oh my. Do you mind if I pour my supplement package
in your broth? You know I do, though, consume everything.
You do. That's what I love about you.
I suffer the consequences, which is why I'm trying to get my stomach stabilized so I can continue to enjoy food.
I do love that about you. And, like, I think I know a lot of people with dietary restrictions, especially in L.A., and they like to just, like, tell the world about it. Like, oh, this is what's going You? No. You don't tell anyone?
I'm telling
you. You just silently vomit in the corner and come back. Like nothing happened.
Yeah.
Big story that you covered last year.
Yeah.
Or 2 years ago, last year, the refugee.
Oh, yeah.
In what country?
He was a Congolese refugees in a refugee camp in Malawi.
In Malawi.
Right.
And you went to the refugee. So basically, long story short, he was in the Congo. He was doing some anti-government stuff. Why don't you tell it?
Yeah, he was in the Congo. He's a law student. He protested the president. He gets arrested. You can't do that. The Congo has had a despotic government for quite some time. And he ends up surviving a firing squad. The rest of the people that were leading this protest got shot and killed. He watched that. He experienced that. And then he fled the country. He ended up two countries away in this little sliver of a country called Malawi, where there's refugee camps. And he spent 11 years in the refugee camp, which is just amazing because people actually spend 20, 30, people are born in the refugee camp, have kids in the refugee camp, die in the refugee camp, particularly in Africa. It's incredible.
It's like Club Med though, right?
Oh yeah, it's really lovely. So he while he's there, he met a woman, also a Congolese refugee, who had her own harrowing story of surviving persecution in Congo, fell in love, got married, and then he got... while he was there, he learned English. He got a college degree in the camp, and then he was got admission through the UN Refugee Agency to move to the United States and settle in the United States. But he only had one ticket, so he figured he'd fly here, and then President Hillary Clinton would just continue to allow lots of refugees to come in the country, and then his wife would come after a few months. But he actually got here in October of 2016,
right?
And things sort of changed the following month, and His wife is still in the refugee camp in Malawi. So I was spending a lot of time with him. He had, when he got here, he had a very interesting job. He worked at a sushi packaging plant. It was basically a fish packaging plant for sushi restaurants. So I went, and he worked the overnight shift. And it was freezing. It was middle of winter. And then there was a freezer, which was negative 20 degrees, that he had to go in and get the fish and bring it out to like the 5-degree area.
Wow.
And chop it up, package it up. And then it would get sent to the best sushi restaurants along the East Coast. This was the main distribution center.
So they'd get like their fish from all over the world?
From Sea of Japan.
Wow.
There was sea urchin and all kinds. I mean, everything was in there.
Very cool.
And it would come fly into Newark Airport and then go to his little... warehouse a few miles away, and on this overnight shift were refugees from all over the world chopping and packaging
the best
fish,
sushi,
the best sushi stuff that, you know, they're holding fish in their hands that's going to end up being worth, you know, $1,000 a plate at some omakase joint in Midtown, right? And
Do they know how expensive it's going to be?
No, and Andre had never even had sushi. Yeah, you would know. He had no even concept of what it was really going
to hilarious.
Become. And it was almost all refugees in there from all over the world. Philippines, Congo,
wow.
Rwanda, all parts of Africa.
Did you go to the packaging plant?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I hung out there for a night. It was amazing.
What's it like there? Is it like super clean? Is it like, is there the high end fish and then there's the middle fish and the low end fish?
Yeah, there's also the accoutrements, like the chopstick area and the soy sauce area.
Get out of here.
Because it's a kind of a one stop shop. So they do all that kind of stuff. And it's owned by Koreans from the church known as the Moonies, the Church of
Are
the
you
Reverend
serious?
Moon. Yeah.
Koreans, huh?
They have a...
It's cultural appropriation, bro.
They have a massive, fish packaging empire. And he was my window into that world. And his boss, the manager, who's a white American, extremely passionate about food. I mean, he talked to me about Chilean sea bass for 45 minutes.
Patagonian toothfish.
I've never heard of that one.
That's Chilean sea bass.
Oh, okay.
Chilean sea bass.
Yeah.
Used to be called Patagonian toothfish.
And that didn't sell
it
well?
They weren't moving any fish.
I wonder why. That's
so
amazing.
They were like, we got to change the name of this. They changed it to Chilean sea bass. It's not a sea bass.
Right.
It's not a sea bass.
What is it?
It's a motherfucking toothfish. But after they did that, they went like almost extinct because like people were like buying it up so much.
Yeah, amazing.
But now I think there's sustainable practices for it. That's pretty cool. So
he did that, and then I went to Africa.
But that's the thing. You went to Malawi, to the refugee camp. I'm sure you have a lot of crazy stories about the people there and the things you've seen, but you know what I care about?
The food?
Yes. What did you eat in the refugee
camp? So in the refugee
camp... Can I guess?
I didn't actually
I'm thinking
eat.
A lot of cassava. Was it cassava heavy?
Yeah, totally.
It was?
No.
Oh,
what is cassava? Wait.
Cassava is like a root... That is like...
Is it an African root?
It's an African root. It's very... Can we look up cassava? It's like a...
Is it easy
like
to come
main
by?
Form of sustenance type situation.
Oh, maybe. They have this like corn flour stuff that the UN food program, the World Food Program provides them.
Okay.
And they get like a bag a month. And then they can also buy rice if they have like side hustles, which would be like going into the bush to collect firewood and, you know, selling that or turning that into charcoal. It is, and then people also have like livestock. Like there's some, you'll see some random chickens walking around and whatnot.
Interesting.
I mean, it's, there's not a lot of food whatsoever.
What do they do with the flour?
They cook it up and kind of eat it like porridge.
Like a porridge?
Yeah. And I did not eat in there at all.
You didn't?
I brought a ton of snack bars and Nutri-Grain bars and that kind of thing, which I both like, which I was intending to like give to people, you know, give, you know, just when I'm talking to somebody, you know, I would share a Nutri-Grain bar, but my fixer ended up like eating, you know, he loved them. So he ended up eating all of them, or most of them. And then
the fixer was just like a waspy guy from Connecticut, right? I would be eating all this food you brought for the refugees.
He took me, he lives in Malawi in the capital city, Lilongwe. And one day after we went to the refugee camp, we were hungry. I was particularly hungry because I didn't have any of my Nutri-Grain bars. And he took me to his favorite restaurant, which was a place owned by Indians, as a matter of fact, oddly enough. And it's called Mr. Chicken. And that's
really
part of the reason why I'm dealing with some stomach issues.
Mr. Chicken?
Mr. Chicken.
You think Mr. Chicken got you?
Mr. Chicken gave me, I know, Campylobacteria.
Really?
Which is a foodborne illness that comes from chicken poop.
By the way, Mr. Chicken is a sponsor of this podcast.
Oh.
So, you know, it was probably just a one-time
Mr. Chicken.
Thing.
It's not as shitty as Matt claims it to be.
Mr. Chicken.
Mr. Chicken, I ate this chicken, which it tasted to me as a little like undercooked, but maybe that's the way it works there. So
Their website doesn't work, by the way. Mr. Chicken's website is down.
I bet. So I get this bacterial infection. The next day I'm at church in the refugee camp and I start to feel very sick and I tell my fixer, we gotta go. And he takes me to a clinic and I get to the clinic and then it runs out of power. So I'm in this darkened clinic, but they gave me a antibiotic in my veins as opposed to an oral antibiotic. Yeah. There they just give you like the highest dose of whatever they've got and they shoot it into your veins. They don't mess around with the pills. And the good part about that was I felt better immediately. Like it was instantaneous. And then I was able to work, which was great. So I had to go back to this clinic every day to get a re-injection. A week later when I'm getting off the plane at JFK Airport, I was like OJ running through the airport to the bathroom, and something was off. And then I went to a doctor in America, and I found out not only did I have this Campylobacteria, I also had what's called C. diff, which if you had actually, you know, fulfilled your parents' dreams and gone to medical school, you would have raised your eyebrows about this one, because this is a...
C. diff is my favorite rapper. Love C.
diff. C. diff is a very... problematic bacterial infection to the point that the Department of Health in Philadelphia was alerted to the fact that I had it. And a woman called me from the Department of Health and interviewed me for 20 minutes to find out where I got it, where I've been eating, and who I've been in contact with.
Fucking Mr. Chicken, bro. You got by Mr. Chicken.
And I feel like maybe my whole balance has been jacked up since then.
Really?
Yeah.
So have they gotten rid of the bacteria?
They say it doesn't last... I think it's bacteria. I think bacteria is the plural.
Bacteria. Did I say bacterias?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because back.
Guys, that's the end of our podcast. We can never come back from that.
I don't know.
Have they gotten rid of the bacteria?
Yeah. They say it's not supposed to be there a year later, but. What it does is the antibiotics. I was on the most potent antibiotics that kills the good bacteria as well as the bad bacteria.
But you were staying at a hotel in Malawi, right?
Yeah, I stayed at a inn where
what
there
was
were...
the food like at the hotel?
Oh, it was very good.
Was it?
Yeah, it was good. It was sort of the coffee was great in the morning, and they had like
is the coffee? I'm always curious about this. Is the coffee like, since that's where a lot of our coffee comes from,
right?
Is it like local coffee? Like, hey, we got this from next door,
or does it
like go get processed? And
doesn't have to be roasted elsewhere.
It does have to be roasted, but I'm curious if like they can just like they take off some of the beans for themselves, just roast them on a fucking frying pan, and then you know.
Right. I know there's like a movement to try to do more of the roasting locally where these beans are harvested, but I don't actually know where the British people that ran this inn where they got their coffee from.
Interesting.
They would save me dinner because it was a communal dinners, and there were like scientists and other journalists that were all staying at this place. We'd have these like fascinating conversations.
It sounds very romantic. Like, it sounds very cool.
It was cool. It was like they, you know, dim the lights, and you know, you're all sort of like, it felt like you.
Everyone put on a British accent.
Yeah, there were some like unsettling colonial elements.
Yes.
To enjoying kind of a comfortable, lavish meal.
Right.
One of the poorest countries in Africa. But there's really kind of no other place to stay. There's that, and then there's
the
Chinese hotels.
Were you guys like drinking booze?
I was drinking Black Label.
Had Black Label there?
Yeah.
Wow. What else booze-wise?
That was all I was drinking. They had beer. They had beer.
Yeah.
But I just went. And it was an honor system at the... For the bar.
Love that.
It's the best.
That's very cool.
Because I'll pay for the drink, each drink, but my pour might be heavier.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm fascinated by that, these little evenings that you guys would have.
Yeah, it was cool. And there was one German doctor there who was diagnosing my bacterial infection, and he was very upset about the way they handled my situation.
Yeah, I imagine. Hospital in Malawi isn't up to standards of the hospital in Dusseldorf, you fucking asshole. And then before that, you had an epic trip to Afghanistan.
Right.
What were you covering in Afghanistan?
I was covering the story of a doctor from Philadelphia who is like kind of a pacifist. When he was in medical school, he couldn't afford medical school. So he figured he'd join the Navy and they'd pay for medical school. So he goes to medical school and then the Navy's like, okay,
happens.
Now you owe. It was after 9/11, but he thought the Navy meant that he'd go to like Okinawa and just like chill out.
Yeah.
Instead.
Chill out. Do some opium and get with some island ladies.
Exactly. Totally chill.
Like
and then
the
get
movies.
Your free medical degree. And, you know, instead they apparently we needed people in Afghanistan and we're running out of Marines and soldiers. So they sent these Navy corpsmen. So we ended up in the middle of nowhere in Afghanistan near the Pakistani border. I went there only because he had graduated from a high school near Philly and I was working for the Philadelphia Inquirer. I had no other story. But when I got there, that's when I found out he had sort of an interesting situation going on, which was that the base was like bombed by, they were hit by mortar fire by the Taliban every few nights. And right before he left, an adoption that he and his wife had been working on for several years from Ethiopia because they hadn't had trouble getting pregnant. They found out that their adoption had gone through, and a week before he found out he was being deployed to Afghanistan, him and his wife found out that they were getting little Abraham, their future son, from Ethiopia from an orphanage.
What?
So now he was going to be leaving his wife with his newborn. And also that week, she found out she was pregnant. So he was then this pacifist doctor was in the middle of Afghanistan getting like mortar fired, you know, every night, grabbing a weapon and running to the outskirts of the base to protect it. And he had these two newborns at home. And during, like, I was there with him, we'd be like smoking cigars outside the medical tent. And then the siren would go to say that there was a incoming fire, right? So he would be on the phone with his wife and be like, oh, I gotta go. Someone just came into the clinic with a little flu or something. And then he would end up going, grabbing his weapon and then, you know, going to look for Taliban.
Holy shit.
And I would go into the bunker with all the Tibetan and Nepalese cooks, because on the base, all the cooks are not American or Afghan. They're, you know, South Asians.
Interesting.
Because they're cheaper.
Yeah.
So I would be in these little bunkers, you know, nervously, you know, bumming cigarettes from these
Nepalese guys. Have you guys ever seen Everest? Just like making dumb conversation. What was the food like on the base?
It was plentiful. I mean, you could get, like, for breakfast, there's one of everything, you know. I mean, it wasn't, like,
super
flavorful.
Was it, like, an American
flavorful.
Breakfast? Like,
American
eggs
breakfast.
And bacon and...
Eggs,
no, probably
bacon,
not
waffles.
Bacon. Was there pork?
Yeah.
Really? Interesting.
You're
thinking a Muslim country. No, we're like,
yeah,
we must have our pork.
Right. Yeah, they weren't going to not. I'm sure the pork industry lobbied to make sure that they were getting those military contracts to send that good Iowa pork over to Afghanistan. It wasn't very good, but it was totally plentiful, and it was also available. you know, at all times,
and
which
then
is great.
Am I remembering correctly? Wasn't there like a story with like a wedding that you went to or something?
Oh yeah.
Do you remember that? Can you talk about that with an aspect on the food and stuff like that and
yeah.
drink? Wasn't there booze involved
there was,
too?
Like I didn't
bootlegging.
There wasn't really food. But there were two weird things about this wedding. One, I never saw the bride because the men and women celebrated on entirely different floors of the wedding hall. My fixer, the guy who like helped me out, who was on the base, I went with him to Kabul to do some more interviews, and he was the guy who like took me around, drove me around, and whatnot. And
he ate all your
his
power
cousin,
bars.
Yeah, as
all
they
your
do.
Fixers just jack your power
they
bars.
Always do. He took me to this wedding of his cousin in Kabul. Never saw the bride, but we were all like dancing with the men on one floor of this wedding hall, and I just made a. You know, casual remark to his brother that, you know, I'm like, you know, this is the first, happens to be the first wedding I've ever been to without alcohol. And he's like, you want alcohol? I'll get you alcohol. And we got in his car and we drove through the streets of Kabul and we went to an alcohol dealer.
No way.
Like, went into a store. He talked to the guy. The guy went to a back room and in a paper bag, he gave him a six pack of German beer that I never heard of. And then we get into the car.
That's
and
hilarious.
He gives me a beer and he starts drinking a beer. I'm like, are you sure? You know, we're driving. He's like, you know, alcohol's illegal, so there's no law against drunk driving.
Interesting.
Because you can, you know, ban something that already doesn't exist.
This is so funny.
It
Wait,
was pretty
what,
fun.
What was the front? The front for the
it was like a bodega.
Place.
It was like where you would buy like a you know a Lucy cigarette
right.
in America.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's always the, you know the front's always the same regardless of the culture of the country.
Yeah, and then the Afghan what well, the food at the Afghan wedding. I'm imagining a lot of rice.
You know, there I ate some. I didn't really eat at that wedding, but I went to people's homes.
Were you like,
and they
oh,
would
I
always...
have two bacterial... Oh, no, that happened after.
They would... I ate a lot of rice on floors in people's homes.
The hand? Are they hand rice people or no?
They are... Yeah, they had like a laffa-like bread. And then very chewy, large chunks of meat that smelled like horse... That happened in one place that smelled like horse, but may have not been horse.
Like the meat smelled like horse meat?
Yeah, it's, yeah.
How do you know what horse meat smells
well,
like,
Well, it
Matthew?
Smelled like a horse. Like, I know what horses smell like.
And you think that the meat smells like the animal?
Well, is that...
I don't know,
do
actually.
Do chickens I don't know.
Does the breast of chicken smell like if you picked up a chicken?
I don't know what chicken... Huh. Interesting.
Can we find
Google
out
that?
If there's horse meat in Afghanistan? Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
IKEA meatballs, there was horse meat. I've actually eaten horse meat in Montreal because it's a big – in Montreal, they do it a lot. They do horse tartare.
Really?
Which I've had, which is actually delicious.
So it was raw?
Yeah, it's lean. It's super lean. It's almost like bright red, like almost looks artificially red.
Was it chewy or it kind of
I mean, it was like a tartare, so it was like ground up. But horse is served in a lot of parts of the world. It's just like we in the West that like are like grossed out by
it. Yeah, why don't we do it?
Because we're like, oh, they're cute animals. And we're very against cute animals. Although, also, like, I guess since we ride them. But, like, in Eastern Europe, they eat a bunch of horse. The French eat it. Sardinia, is there a horse-eating people?
I mean, rabbits are cuter than, well, I guess a lot of people are against rabbit eating as well.
Yeah, but lamb is the cutest. And
That's
we eat lamb.
True.
I mean, it's weird selective cute, you know,
maybe because we feel like we have a bond with horses because they riding and we use them.
Not me. I fucking tartared that motherfucker. All right.
Do they like breed horses for food consumption?
No, I don't think so. I think they take like
an old horse?
An old horse who's like done and they're like, send him to Poland.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there was like a whole like. There was a whole thing that they found out, like they were sending horses from races to Poland
that weren't couldn't run anymore.
And
like you lose
them.
The race, and then you get
turned into an IKEA meatball.
Wow!
And it was like a whole thing.
Is there any meat you would not eat?
Me?
Yeah.
Well,
who else would I be? What do you mean me? Who else would I be talking to just now?
Wow.
Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Is this how you are?
No,
with Michelle Norris. What a dick.
No, she doesn't ask stupid questions
please,
like me.
Please, I can't wait till you talk to the Malawi refugee and they use one grammatical word they mess up. You're like, what the fuck did you just say? You stupid idiot. I probably wouldn't eat an endangered animal.
Oh.
I would eat dog if it was culturally correct.
Okay.
If I'm in Korea and someone's like, yo, come to, you know, my house.
Right.
We're doing some, you know, Doberman Tartar.
Sure. Whoa. But polar bear.
I wouldn't eat a polar bear. I wouldn't eat endangered. I think that would be my
that's
thing.
That's a good line.
Yeah. I think that's my line. Like whale, I don't know about whale. We're going to be in Japan where you can get whale.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if whale's actually endangered or that's also on the cute list and people are like, you shouldn't eat whale because they're cute. Right. I don't know if it's like, if there's enough whale to go around.
Right. They can't really farm whale.
You can't farm whale. And also, I know, I mean, from watching Deadliest Catch, it's like kind of shady how they do it. They're like, we're using it for research. And like, they're like, yeah, we need 1,000 of these whales for research. It's like, no, you don't. Yeah, we know what you're doing. So. We'll get back to Matt in a minute, but first, a couple of fun facts about cassava. It needs to be prepared correctly or else you'll die eating it because the root has traces of cyanide in it. Another fun fact, cassava is the same thing as yuca. Hence that famous song, you say cassava, I say yuca. Cassava, yuca, yuca, cassava. Let's not die of cyanide. Let's not die of cyanide. Yeah! All right, back to Matt. We have to get to the second part of the podcast now.
Okay.
Which is where I ask you some rapid fire questions. We don't really have a name for this part of the podcast, so I try to come up with a name with the guests. Okay. You came up with the name of the podcast.
Right.
So maybe what do you think this should be called? Where you get like the rapid fire. It can't be quick fire because that's like Top Chef.
Could we do something with like vomit? Like because you're vomiting answers, you know,
you always got to bring it back to your fucking bacterial flora.
Yeah. Well, I just, because I might vomit, because I just had an avocado toast on gluten-free bread.
Yeah. Wow. You are frail, my friend. An avocado toast can take you out.
I went to a gluten-free, before I got on the train this morning, I went to a gluten-free, dairy-free kosher place that is like fancy-ish. I mean, it's just expensive.
It should just be called Jew-friendly, by the way. That's insinuated. That's gluten-free and dairy-free.
Right.
Jews, welcome.
I don't know. It's only Ashkenazi Jews, though, who seem to have more stomach problems.
Yes.
Like
yes.
You guys, the Sephardic.
We don't. Well, because we grew up eating like, you know, wacky, spicy, this and that.
Right.
Foods.
Right.
Not bland like...
Borscht.
Eastern European foods.
True.
Okay, ready? It's time for Vomiting with Matt Katz.
Yes.
Which is also going to be the name of his new NPR show, Vomiting with Matt Katz, right after All Things Considered. what is your earliest food memory?
I mean, I hate to play to the part, but when... I remember going to my favorite treat as a child was going to New York City, and they had this place that no longer exists. I don't know if you remember it. It was called David's Cookies.
No.
Do you remember this?
Oh, I think I do.
They were like these little shops. I mean, this is like early 80s, so this is before cupcake spots on every corner.
Yeah.
And it was a little shop, and they made these big cookies, and you could smell it down the block.
Soft, right?
Soft.
Yeah.
Like large and big chunks of chocolate or whatever else. And my biological father would take me there on my random weekend visits with him, and then I'd come home and get an ear infection.
Shout out to biological fathers. All of you. Yo, you got to handle your business, and that business does not involve kids. We get it.
You got to take him to David's Cookies and then see him off.
And send him to the Port Authority.
Right. Send him home to their mother, who'd wonder why every time I came home from my father, I'd have an ear infection. So I had this ear infection. I ended up going
to the fucking ear infection.
Yeah. So, but this is my earliest food. My two earliest food memories are going to get these cookies. And then I went to the first allergist in New York or America, this guy, Dr. Geller, who was like way ahead of his times, like 1981. And he put me on an elimination diet.
Okay.
Which is similar to what I'm on now, but whatever. And so one thing that people are not allergic to, like no one is allergic to, are sardines. So one of my earliest memories is having sardines for breakfast in kindergarten and being sort of anxious about not having, you know, like Fruit Loops and with like all my friends.
That sounds like the worst thing you could do to a kid.
And then I found out that I was allergic to milk. So then I would, which meant no birthday cakes ever at birthday parties through elementary school. It also meant no pizza at birthday parties, which is the only thing that's ever at birthday parties.
And this was, by the way, in the 80s before it was like, can we have two cakes, one
right.
for...
Totally. And do you know the one thing, non-dairy thing at a pizza place in the 80s in Queens?
Garlic knots?
I don't think there were garlic knots back in the day.
Okay, what?
Meatball sub. So in sixth grade, we were allowed to leave elementary school for, because it was the final year of my elementary school, to go down the block for pizza, for the pizza place for lunch. So we would all run down the block, everybody order their pepperoni slices, and I would, my mother would call the night before to place an order for the meatball sub because no one orders the meatball sub, so it would take a while for them to prepare it. But they would never have it ready. So I would, at the last 5 minutes before I had to run back, I'd sit there like hungry with all my friends, and then I would get this massive meatball sub and take a big bite, and then we'd have to run back to school, but then this meatball, yeah.
By the way, I know your mom very well, and I'm just picturing her.
She's very loving
she's
and caring.
Most loving and caring.
And wanted to make sure that I would not be left out on these pizza excursions.
Yeah.
I think it was character building.
You know what I think it is? Are you ready to get in deep? I think because your father, your bio, kept abandoning you.
Yeah.
Your body was abandoning
the food. I was rejecting it.
You were rejecting it. And that way, anything that he gave you early on, you associated with someone who rejected you. And so your body subliminally was, not subliminally, subconsciously, was rejecting all the foods that he was giving you.
Are we still in the rapid fire?
No. This is actually an intervention.
Oh, my God.
Green Eggs and Dan is not a real podcast, Matt. Hold on.
Bring
in the biological bio.
Are these guys are psychoanalysts?
Yeah. They're all recording you for their master's degree.
Sardines and meatball subs.
What is your death row meal?
My favorite food product are potatoes. I love potatoes of any kind.
Oh,
I think I would have garlic mashed potatoes, and then I'd like something sweet afterwards, and I would have the kosher for Passover jelly rings.
You know, what? That's
so
disgusting.
Good. They're so good. They're also non-dairy. You know what I'm talking about, right?
You would choose to have kosher for Passover food
those.
As your last meal?
Yeah.
Maybe you're more of a Jew than your 23andMe says you are.
That might be true. Can I have booze? I would have also... Can I have booze at my last
meal? Yes.
So I had a Black Label on the rocks.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's the Scotch-Irish side.
Just a quick aside. Have you ever had Hasselback potatoes?
No, what's up?
Oh, I got to make it for you next time you're in LA or I'm in Philly. You take a potato. You slice it horizontally, almost to the end, so it basically looks like a deck of cards almost, like really thin slices of the potato, of the raw potato. Olive oil, garlic, salt, pepper, put it in the oven. It cooks like that. It comes out, and it's like crispy on the outside, and it's like, again, it looks like a pages of a book almost,
sure.
of potato, though. And it's such a fun way to do potatoes.
Do you eat it with your hand? Like pick it up like a potato?
You can pick it up with your hand. You can use a fork. It's
cool.
Like a whole potato, but it's delicious and very fun. The kids would love it.
All right, great.
I'm going to make it for them next time I'm there. What's the best high-end meal you've ever had?
About 12 years ago, I took my wife, who was then my fiance, to Israel, and we ate at a place called Mesa in Tel Aviv. And I think, for lunch, and it was a tasting menu situation, like 12, 13 dishes. And I think it was because I had not really experienced like high-end culinary cuisine of that kind before, that it just like blew our minds. It was the first time we ever like took a picture of what we're eating. Like we didn't know what most of it was.
Before cell phones, you're using a film camera.
Yeah. We were like out in the restaurant. Exactly right. The plating, it was the first time I experienced like expert plating.
Yeah.
Like everything was beautiful. There was like foam.
Yeah.
That stuff, which I'd never seen before. That kind of still stands out to me, even though I might maybe have had equivalent meals since then.
Okay.
Mesa. A friend of mine's cousin was a chef there. That's the only reason I would have even gone to this place. And then we did the cheaper option to go during lunch.
Bro, we're running out of time, but this reminds me of a story that I can't believe we didn't talk about.
What's that?
Which is one of my favorite meals I've had with you, which was at Zahav.
Zahav.
In Philly. And the way we got the reservation was I called and lied and said that I was a chef at the Spotted Pig.
Right.
Because I interned at the Spotted Pig for a couple months, and like I used to just get into restaurants by saying, I'm a chef at the Spotted Pig. So we do it, and they like roll out the red carpet, and your wife is not a good liar or bullshitter.
No.
And she hated the fact that they were coming over, like, you're at the Spotted Pig? And I'm like, yeah. They're like, oh, brother. And then the chef came out, and he was like, I'd like to give you a tour of the kitchen.
Oh,
and Deb got up, and she was like, she was like
first
hyperventilating.
She was like 18 months pregnant.
She felt she was on Ocean's 11.
We felt like this was our town, and he is probably still the most famous chef, the biggest celebrity chef in Philly, Mike Solominov. And he sat down with us and was super nice. And you like bullshitted your way about through the whole conversation about
bad.
The Spotted Pig.
I was like, yeah, April sends her regards. She's the chef of the Spotted Pig. Your wife wanted to kill me. Anyway, that was
But we've
funny.
Continued. It actually wraps around to what we were talking about earlier, because we've continued going to Solominov restaurants.
His restaurants are my favorites.
And now we go to Abe Fisher every time.
Abe Fisher is one of his restaurants in Philly. Mm-hmm. It's like Ashkenazi Jewish food, but high-end and like tasting menu.
Right.
It's amazing. Yeah. All of his restaurants are great. We're going to have links to them in the Instagram. Best low-end meal you've ever had?
I mean, I got to go with Philly cheesesteaks, and I'll go with, should I go with whatchamacallit on South Street better? Jim's.
That's my favorite, too. Restaurant pet peeve. What is your restaurant pet peeve?
Oh, it's easy. They take my plate when I'm not done.
100%.
They don't do that in any other country in the world.
Yes.
Have you ever been to another country where they
Matt
do that?
Matt Katz is coming in hot. I love it.
I mean, I don't understand. It takes me a while to digest. So I sometimes will put the fork down for a second. Maybe I'm grabbing a sip.
Hate it.
I don't understand.
I also hate it when, let's say, I'm done and someone I'm meeting with is not done, and they take my plate away.
No, don't do that.
Because then you make them feel like they have to rush.
Totally.
You know, the reason you don't get it in Europe as much is because people don't really work for tips there. They just have a salary.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter how long you stay.
They don't need the turnover like they do in America. So they want to rush the fuck out of you.
Right.
I hate it. I'm with you. Good pet peeve. Favorite drunk food?
I mean, it's
back
so... to
the cheese steak.
Yeah, it's really so, like, out of central casting that the Philly guy comes on and keeps talking about cheesesteaks.
Hey, man.
It's tremendous.
It's a magical food, especially when you're drunk. I mean, it like, goes straight to your brain and just, like, plays all your neurons.
It really does.
Like a symphony.
Oh, my God. And then you just pass out so nicely.
That's great. Favorite hangover food?
You know, I like a good everything bagel, lox, cream cheese, cucumber and onion. No tomato. Although, like, you know, 30% of the time they put the tomato on there. Do you like tomato on lox and cream cheese?
Yeah, I don't mind it.
Bagel? I feel like it overpowers the juices of the tomato kind of get into everything and it overpowers it. Whereas
I can see
get a good crunch with the cucumber and the onion playing off the cream cheese.
Favorite bagel place? Want to give a shout out?
Yes, Spread in Philly has Montreal style bagels.
Oh yeah, Montreal really style bagels. They don't boil their bagels; they bake their bagels.
Right,
delicious. Shout out to what's the place in Montreal? Saint-Viateur bagels.
Oh, is that the
that's the
hot spot?
Favorite celebrity chef?
You know, I'm not a big. Not a big food guy.
You were a Bourdain guy, though, no?
Yeah. I've watched several Bourdain things. I am very impressed by Bourdain. I know you love Bourdain.
Yeah.
I get tired of food TV because I find they run out of adjectives.
Yeah.
Have you ever, I feel like they describe food often the way I describe food, which is, and I don't know anything. Thing, really.
Right.
Oh, that is really good. That's excellent.
Yeah.
You know, it's always just as
Oh my. Amazing.
Right.
Yeah. Bust out your fucking thesaurus, Rachel Ray.
Totally. Totally. Or tell me what you're tasting. And sometimes you get, there's a mix of the sweet and the savory. I feel like that's the most detailed evaluation of food they give.
They always bullshit with that too. They're like, the lemon cuts the fat perfectly. Shut the fuck
right,
up.
Right. Yeah.
The leaven cuts the fat. Fuck you. Any least favorite celebrity chef, or you're just not in that world?
Who's that guy? There's a famous guy who makes super shitty restaurants. Is it Mario Batali?
No, Mario Batali's restaurant is
really good. Who's the guy that the Times always trashes his celebrity restaurants?
Yeah, what's his name? Guy Fieri.
I guess I don't like that guy. I guess why not?
Pete Wells had such a legendary takedown of his restaurant that he opened in Times Square. You guys got to look that up.
I don't like the idea of somebody being famous on TV and then thinking he can just make crappy restaurants and make money off
it. I was talking to our good friend Mark Cuano.
Yes.
And he says that someone did a side-by-side of Bourdain versus Guy Fieri.
Uh-huh.
Guy Fieri apparently gives so much money to charity and
does
so many good causes.
Generous?
And Bourdain wasn't giving anything. And
okay.
It was apparently.
I take that back then.
Yeah, I know. I hate the guy too, but it changed the way that I think about him a little bit. What food can't you stand? What food do you hate?
Beets.
Beets by? Sorry.
Give me a second.
You hate beets, huh?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I don't like the way they look. I don't like the way they kind of, when you put your fork in, they kind of bleed.
You're racist against beets. No. I don't like that color. Get them out of my fucking neighborhood.
I mean, they are. and they over. Now I can't describe them at all.
Oh,
now that you've set it up.
Does the lemon cut through the, the beet taste?
You like beets.
You know what? I do like beets, but I do think that beets are overdone. If I see another goat cheese walnut beet salad in a fucking restaurant, I'm going to flip a table.
Why is that always in the...
I don't know, man. People lost their shit for that when that came out, and it's I'm so over it.
Right.
Brussels sprouts has taken their place the most overdone.
I feel like it's used a lot just because it's the color and adds a little,
As a little color. They're annoying to cook, though. You have wrap them in foil and boil them and then take them out. And the skin is shitty to take off.
I bet.
I'm with you. And then you think you have fucking prostate cancer the next day you piss because you forgot you had beets.
Oh, is that true? It's like asparagus? It changes
your pee turns red, dude. And then you're what the fuck? And you're fucking beets.
I did not know that.
It's
That's
not
crazy.
Worth the cancer panic you get.
Wow, do people go to their doctors and they just found out they had a beet walnut salad from Au Bon Pom the day before?
I bet it's the first question every urologist asks. Did you have beets? Oh, I did have beets. Fucking
funny.
Beets. It's always
what else? The asparagus makes it smell.
Asparagus makes it smell weird, but it doesn't make
you
think you have
cancer. What
else
changes your urine? Those are the only two things?
I think that's it. What weird fucking vegetables we change your urine? Go fuck yourself, beets and asparagus. Matt, this was my favorite conversation in general that I've ever had.
Wow.
I love talking to you always.
I love you. Through and through.
And it's fun we're not yelling at each other about politics
I know.
As well.
We'll do that in Japan.
After this when we go out for lunch. But thank you so much for making it. Matt Katz, everyone.
Thank
Matt, where can we follow you?
Oh, at MattKatz00 on Twitter. MattKatz00.
Yeah. Oh, you know what I didn't mention in your credits?
What's
that? Sarah Jessica Parker's favorite voice.
Oh, yes.
She said that.
She told me that during a pledge drive at WNYC. It was an amazing moment.
Amazing.
She smelled very good because she has
a don't make it creepy.
SJP.
Don't make it creepy, Matt. Don't make it creepy, bro. And as always, you can see all the restaurants that we named are going to be links to them, including Mr. Chicken. Their link that doesn't work. All their links are going to be in the Instagram. Matt Katz, I love you. Thank you for
love
being
you
here.
Love you too. Thanks, Dan.
This has been Green Eggs and Dan. Until next time, I need a catchphrase.
Oh, yeah. Stop vomiting.
Stop vomiting and keep your food down. This episode of Green Eggs and Dan was produced by Andrew Steven. Executive produced by Jeff Umbro and The Podglomerate. You can find more of their podcasts at thepodglomerate.com. Special thanks to Brother Chris Moreau, Engine Room Studios, and the rest of the Loudspeakers Network. To see pictures of Matt Katz's fridge, information about the restaurants mentioned in today's episode, and more, follow me on Twitter and Instagram at StandUpDan. The theme music is Beautiful Food by Idan, and interstitial music is by Breakmaster Cylinder. If you like this show, please tell a friend, share an episode, and leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. The Podglomerate.
a sonic universe.